Welcome to the Let's Talk Energy podcast, hosted by Energy News Network and the Electricity Hub at the Africa Energy Forum 2026. We bring you conversations with the policymakers, investors, regulators, innovators, and industry leaders shaping Africa's energy future. Hello and welcome to the Let's Talk Energy podcast brought to you by EnergyNet in collaboration with the Electricity Hub. I am your host, Blessing Afolabi, and this episode is part of the recorded series ahead of the Africa Energy Forum 2026 in Cape Town, South Africa. Today, we'll be discussing the topic Beyond Renewables, Building Stable, Bankable Power Systems for Africa's Industrialized Future. As Africa pursues industrialization, economic transformation, and universal energy access, the conversation is increasingly shifting beyond megawatts and renewable energy targets to a more fundamental question. How do we build power systems that are reliable enough to support industrial growth and attractive enough to attract long-term investment? The theme for this year's Africa Energy Forum is Building Africa's Industrialized Future. In this episode, we'll be speaking with one of the partners at Norton Rose Fulbright, Sindura Swaminathan, a project finance lawyer with extensive experience advising sponsors, commercial banks, multilateral institutions, and development finance institutions on complex energy and infrastructure projects across Africa and other emerging markets. Drawing on Norton Rose Fulbright's experience advising on some of Africa's most innovative energy transition, storage, renewables, LNG to power, and infrastructure transactions, this conversation explores why grid stability, not generation capacity, may be the single most important factor determining whether Africa achieves its industrial ambitions. The discussion will examine the growing role of hybrid energy systems that combine renewables, storage, and dispatchable generation, the legal and financial reality shaping investor confidence, and why transmission infrastructure, regional power pools, and bankable off-the-take structures will be critical to unlocking the next wave of investment. We'll also explore whether Africa's industrialized future can be powered solely by renewables or whether a more pragmatic transition pathway is needed to balance decarbonization with energy security and economic competitiveness. Hello, Sindura. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Let's Talk Energy. We are so delighted to have you. How are you doing today?
Good, thanks. I'm very excited to talk about a subject that's quite close to my heart. I'm really delighted to be able to have this conversation with you. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity.
Thank you so much for joining us. Let's delve right into the conversation because I am so excited and I'm sure our audience are also itchy to hear from you. The first question will really be focused on grid constraints and not just generations. We've seen that Africa has attracted significant investments into power generation over the past decade, but we're still seeing that many markets are struggling with reliability and access. From your experience advising developers, DFIs, lenders across Africa, as investment conversation shifted from a generation deficit in quotes to a grid deficit, and what are the implications for countries that are seeking to industrialize?
Thank you for that. It's an extremely interesting question. To be perfectly honest, I do think that the conversation has shifted, or at least it should shift and it needs to shift. For a long time, the focus was always on generation deficit, and that makes sense and that made sense. But many African markets, we simply didn't have enough installed capacity. But today, in many jurisdictions, that is no longer an issue. It's not just whether power can be generated. It's also whether that power can actually be delivered reliably to the end users. For example, in practice, we're increasingly looking at grid deficit rather than a generation deficit. That's a critical issue. Transmission and distribution infrastructure has not kept pace with generation investment. So that creates practical constraints, such as projects not being able to evacuate power, grids struggling to balance supply and demand, and outages, which also remain a structural issue. Also, you talked about industrialization, which is a key theme of this year's AEF. This issue is absolutely critical from an industrialization perspective because industry doesn't operate in a theoretical capacity. It requires and operates on reliable and continuous power. For example, if there's a mining operation or a manufacturing plant that cannot rely on stable electricity, investment will simply not happen, and therefore that will stop industrialization. The implication for me is quite clear. We need to prioritize grid development just as much as generation.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Sindura, for that beautiful submission. generation, I would say I completely agree with you that we actually don't have a generation deficit. It's actually a greed deficit. Because if you look across Africa, a lot of countries are generating, but the greed is unable to take it. So balancing demand and supply is an issue. Seeing where cases where there are renewables projects coming up, individual projects, but they're unable to scale up, utility scale, grid connected projects and all of that. I completely agree. And I would like us to just speak a little the renewable aspect that I just mentioned, because we're seeing the narrative across Africa's energy transition, and we're seeing that the focus has been to deploy more renewable energy. Earlier, you said generation is not the problem, but then we're seeing that the industrial economies, they are built on reliability and also sustainability. So it goes hand in hand. It's not just focus only on reliable power and then we leave sustainability. But then we're seeing that those industrial communities merge both together. As we're seeing reliability, we're seeing sustainability going hand in hand. How would you advise the investors, the policymakers, in thinking about the relationship between renewable energy ambitions and the need to be flexible in the dispatching power systems that are capable of supporting manufacturing, mining, and other large-scale industrial growth?
That's a wide question, but let's see if I'm able to advise the policymakers and investors. Renewables is absolutely key. It's absolutely central to the transition that we all want and we're all seeking. And they're increasingly also the cheapest form of new generation, which is a great thing. Africa has enormous potential in renewables, particularly solar. You can see this happening in Côte d'Ivoire, Morocco, Egypt. They're just some of a few handful examples that I have at hand. But industrial economies are built on reliability. It's not just on affordability or sustainability. The issue with renewables, as we all know, particularly solar and wind, is that they're variable. When you have variable energy sources, the output depends on the weather conditions and not just on demand patterns at all. They cannot just be turned off and turned on to match demand in real time. That creates a mismatch, particularly during peak generation. That's often when demand is low when it comes to renewable energy. And supply can fall when demand is high, particularly in the evening. So the system has to manage two sort of uncertainties simultaneously, demand volatility and supply volatility. That's why the conversation has to be beyond just simply scaling renewables. So scaling renewables is not the answer. Policymakers and investors, they need to think in terms of system design and not just capacity. So how do we ensure flexibility? How do we ensure dispatchability? How do we create systems that can actually support industrial loads? Again, linking with industrialization. So the reality is renewables are absolutely necessary, but they're not sufficient for a stable industrial scale power system. Without flexibility, we have instability, curtailment, and inefficient systems. Transition is more than about green power. It is about flexible power systems. That's how I would sell my pitch.
Thank you so much, Sindhura. I would just like to ask you to speak more to what's the solution? Because you said renewables alone cannot solve the problem because the structure is actually a variable energy source. When the demand is high, the generation is low, and vice versa. What solutions would you propose? And that will lead me to the next question. I just wanted to say something regarding the renewable thing. I think that's where the conversations around battery storage should come in. We're seeing that even across projects your company is advising on globally, we're seeing that there's the role of hybridization. There are different sources put together in order to ensure that they're providing that reliable and sustainable energy supply. So we're seeing that combination between renewables, storage, like I mentioned, dispatchable generation. What would you say, or what do you believe is Africa's most realistic pathway to industrialization? Is it that it's not a purely green grid, like you said? We cannot just keep the grid purely, because even the industrialized countries, there's a mix. Is it a hybrid one? And what does that actually mean for the future of the role of gas? Because we're seeing a lot of African countries using gas as a transition fuel. I would like you to also speak to the role of storage, the emerging technologies in Africa's energy mix.
Again, you hit the nail on the head is when you look at the industrialized countries per se, they have a mix. So you can't expect a continent as big as Africa with an electricity need, with a large population that requires access not only to electricity, but to infrastructure. And how you do that is, from my perspective, you also have to put a similar model that you have in Europe, for example, also onto a continent as large as Africa. As you said, what we're seeing globally and very clearly also in Africa, thank God, is the emergence of hybrid systems. As you mentioned, these are a combination of systems. So you combine renewable, which is key. We need renewable, solar, wind, etc., hydro. Hydro projects are a different mammoth of its own. Storage, as you mentioned, you absolutely required storage to be able to deal with this, what I mentioned earlier about the supply and the demand volatility, and also dispatchable generation, as you mentioned, which is gas. You can have a green method of having thermal energy, but you also need a hybrid of other sources of energy. For example, as you can see in Europe, nuclear has become quite the tendency as well. And each component of renewable storage and dispatchable generation, often gas, plays a different role. So renewable provides low-cost energy, as I mentioned earlier, and batteries manage the sort of fluctuation, the short-term fluctuations. And gas provides dispatchable capacity. So power that can, poof, you just click on a finger, it can be called on when it's required and when needed. From a practical standpoint, I do think that for Africa, the most realistic pathway, it's not purely green grid in the short to medium term, but a hybrid one. And these hybrid models, like I said, they're not theoretical at all. They're being deployed. We work on these type of projects all the time. In fact, we're currently working on multiple solar projects with battery storage. And we're also working on gas to power projects, which really shows what's happening on the African continent. Let's talk about gas very quickly. Gas for me plays a key role, and it's important. We shouldn't forget about gas. It can ramp up quickly. It operates flexibly and provides what we call a residual load. So it covers demand when the renewables cannot. So we need gas. We shouldn't see gas as like a competition to renewables. I would actually frame it very differently. It is an enabler of higher renewable penetration because it allows stability to the system. I think over time, while if we do this for the sort of medium, short to medium term, this will evolve to storage, hydrogen, and a lot of other technologies as well. Today, the most essential and critical thing for African markets is that we need dispatchable thermal capacity, and that's absolutely essential for grid stability.
Fantastic. I really like your submission. Recently, I was having a conversation with someone from the Nigeria Wind Energy Council on a podcast, and the conversation with trying to debunk a lot of myths about wind energy in Nigeria. And the conversation came up about there's been a lot of talks about one source of energy replacing the other. People have that ideology that, oh, once it's either solar or wind or hydro or gas. But then the conversation led to the fact that we're not replacing one with the other, but we're trying to utilize, harness all of the sources that we have to ensure that we're actually closing the energy access gap. Africa has the highest energy access deficit in the world with over 600 million people without electricity. And that's a huge gap. And we cannot sit and just focus on just one source. We need to harness all of the sources we have and hybridize them in order to ensure that we're closing the gap and also ensuring economic transformation, because energy is an enabler, is energy that will drive the economy. So we need to ensure that we're doing that. And I agree with your point on gas being an enabler, stabilizing the system and allowing for the infiltration of renewable energies. Thank you so much. It's really been a very insightful conversation. I would like to just quickly run to the next question I have for you, which will focus on bankability, power pools, and investment. One of the interesting themes that we've been seeing across Africa's power markets is that grid stability and bankability are becoming inseparable. I wanted to speak from a lender's perspective. What reforms, maybe around transmission infrastructure, the regional power pools, utility creditworthiness, and optic arrangements or regulation, of course, would have the greatest impact on unlocking the scale of private capital that will be needed to actually build Africa's industrialized future? I know earlier you spoke about the grid, right? And I think that's like a major constraint. I'd just like you to highlight more on this.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is sort of my bread and butter, if I may. It's very practical. If you want grid stability, if you want energy investment, it's a financing issue. Grid stability is not just a technical issue, but it's a bankability and a financing issue. You need people on the table willing to put their money in. And from a lender's perspective or from an investor's perspective, the key question is my project going to generate predictable and reliable revenues? In many African markets, the main risk, again, it's not generation. It is, can my power be evacuated? Is my dispatch guaranteed? And is my offtaker creditworthy? Am I going to get paid at the end of the day? in order to unlock scale, you already mentioned some of the things in your question, is you need to look at your transmission infrastructure. Again, we're going back to the grid. Investment in grids is absolutely critical. We need people putting money into grids. And because without it, the generation assets cannot monetize. So again, goes back to bankability. And if power cannot be evacuated or if dispatch is uncertain, revenues are uncertain, again, affect bankability. Another thing, utility reform and creditworthiness. It's really important to strengthen the utilities on the continent. And you need regulatory reforms to do that, to ensure payment reliability, to ensure long-term bankability. I guess this is where development financial institutions have an extremely important role, is they are part of these discussions, making these sort of policy reforms while talking to governments to ensure that there's this reform and creditworthiness that's put into place, to ensure that there is continuous investment by lenders in the sector. And then obviously you need, on top of that, you need bankable offtake structures. So you need a very clear dispatch regime, you need robust PPAs, and that reduces curtailment risk. Again, this is also where it's also our lender's role, legal advisor's role is extremely important as to how we look at all these risks and where we think our additional value add is. We also have a very key role to ensure that these type of reforms and these type of risks are properly treated. And we have those conversations to ensure everyone around the table understands what's going on. You also mentioned regional power pools. For me, they're absolutely part of the solution. They're not the only solution, but they're part of the solution because they expand markets. It also allows for sharing of information and sharing of good policy that's been done in one country, which can be adapted in another country. It absolutely reduces curtailment when you have power pools. And it also diversifies offtake risk, again, which is great for lenders and from a bankability perspective. So just to give you an example, instead of a solar project in Senegal just being limited to its local grid, power pooling will allow that electricity to be exported across West Africa. Again, reduces curtailment, improves project economics. So pools are great, but they also have restraints. This is why we all need to come around a table and have a discussion on the regulation. How do we do the grid connections between the different countries? How do we deal with payment arrears? How do we deal with utility credit worthiness? How do we deal with payment risk? And also, how do we deal with sovereign and political considerations? Because some regions as well do have other risks that are aligned with it just because of the political situation in certain countries. It's extremely important. But today, we need regional power pools. We also need to have very strong domestic grids. This is sort of my general to-do list on what I think should be looked at from a lender's or bank perspective when looking at grids.
Thank you so much, Sindura. I believe that these questions that you've raised are part of the conversations that will be strengthened during AEF this year. Dear listeners, I hope you're getting ready and prepared to join us live in Cape Town from the 16th to the 19th of June so we could have further discussions. I'm sure Nuts on the Rose Fulbright will be live on ground at AEF this year to speak with partners, investors across the value chain to further strengthen these conversations. And we're really looking forward to it as we're gearing up to push forward the narrative and to ensure that we're actually creating the right structures, having the right conversations, the right partnerships and investment to move projects forward and ensure that we have energy access at the end of the day. And of course, economic transformation. I've really enjoyed this conversation so far with you, Sindura. My final question for you before you give your final words. If we were to be sitting here again at Africa Energy Forum, say in 2035, what do you think would have mattered more for Africa's industrial transformation? Will it be adding more renewable capacity or building power systems that investors trusted enough to finance at scale?
I think for me, the answer is quite clear. It's not just about how much renewable capacity was installed. What really matters is whether Africa succeeded in building power systems that investors have trusted enough to finance at scale. Because ultimately, without reliability, there is no industrialization. Without bankability, there is no private capital. And without investment, there is no energy transition. For me, it's Africa's energy transition story. It's not just about renewables or about constant generation, but it's about having a system that is reliable. That's the story that I would not want to hear about in 2035. I think the countries that are going to succeed the most will be those that invest in grids, that deploy hybrid solutions, and that create stable, predictable, regulated frameworks for their investors. Because at the end, it's capacity that matters. Capacity does matter, but trust in your system that you put matters even more.
Fantastic. Thank you again for the very insightful conversation, Sindura. You've said a lot, but I don't know if you'd like to give just a final word in 30 seconds before we close out the segment.
I really enjoyed the conversation and I'm really looking forward to the Africa Energy Forum this year. For me, it's an excellent event because I really get to learn about what's happening on the continent and to hear people who know what they're talking about. So for me, I would love to hear people's thoughts on what they think about what I think is the future for Africa Energy. I might be wrong, but I would love to be challenged.
I love that. I'm sure our audience are also gearing up to join us at the Africa Energy Forum in Cape Town to drive more of these conversations and, of course, to develop the right partnerships and projects and to propel investment into Africa. Thank you again, Cindera. Very fantastic conversation. To our audience, thank you for joining, for tuning in, and for listening. Until we bring you another episode, please do well to like this podcast, share, and follow us for more insights into Africa's power market. I remain your host, Blessing Afolabi. Do enjoy the rest of your day.
You have been listening to the Let's Talk Energy podcast, hosted by Energy News Network and the Electricity Hub at the Africa Energy Forum 2026. Thank you for joining us. Stay connected for more insights, interviews, and conversations from the forefront of energy in Africa.